Hello, this is Justin Jones. I'm a Minneapolis-based choreographer and dancer, and I'm hosting a series of podcasts exploring the Walker Art Center's Spring 2010 season of dance. This is number 2 in a series of 5. This week, the Walker Art Center and Northrop Dance co-present the Midwest premiere of British choreographer Akram Khan's Bahak at the Northrop Auditorium. In the piece, Khan creates a vision of a modern-day Babel with a cast of characters from around the world stuck waiting in a transit station. As the piece unfolds, they connect and share their experiences, dreams, hopes, and fears. Recently, I spoke on the phone with Mr. Khan about his process and some of the issues raised by the work.
Akram Khan, thanks so much for chatting with me today. I really appreciate it. We're not in the same room, obviously. Where are you today?
I'm in Abu Dhabi, very close to Dubai.
So that I assume that means you're not coming to Minneapolis for the performance of Bahak next week or in 2 weeks.
Unfortunately, no.
Yeah.
No, it's quite bizarre because, I knew that would happen because I'm not in the piece anymore, and I just occasionally, every month, at least try and see the work once when it's on tour, if I can. But it's very much independent somehow.
I'm curious about the title of the work. It's Bahak. Am I pronouncing that right?
That's pretty okay, yeah. You've done it better than most critics.
Well, thank you. What does the title mean, and how did you choose it?
Well, actually, we had several titles, but Bahak literally means carriers, to carry. In Bengali, I was looking for something that kind of, the piece is very much about the sense of belonging and home, and what home means to individual people, and what it means to the collective, but also when this, different individuals who have different homes come together, what kind of transpires from that. And I felt, for me, I remember a critic asking me about, what is your home, because you're traveling so much, and I said my home was my body. And so I kind of based it on that, because the body carries your memories, it carries your grandparents' memories, or DNA, and great-great-grandparents. It's also a political body, because the body is kind of constantly political without being vocally political, but it's also a religious body or a spiritual body, if you like.
Mm.
And it has its own education, so each body has its own very separate education, but it also has a strand and like a memory bank from you're connected to your ancestors in a way. And so in a way, for me, Bahak, meaning carriers, was, I thought the body is the carrier of your memories of home or whatever home is. And so I asked my mother one day, because we were struggling with the title, and I said, what is the Bengali word for carriers? And she said, Bahak.
You were talking about how the body carries education. From what I understand, your body has two very, to me, seemingly contrasting narratives or stories or trainings, I guess, Kathak and contemporary dance. What's interesting to me about that in relation to this work is how Kathak dance is often in the service of a narrative or a story, and contemporary dance, I think of a dance form trying to separate itself from narrative. And I'm curious about how those two influences or those two lineages play out in this piece in particular.
When I was young, I worked with Peter Brook in the theater. And
really?
And I was very fortunate to work with him for about 2 years. We did a touring piece, a touring production called the Mahabharata.
Very famous, yes, yeah.
And I was only 14 then, but it was an incredible experience. So I spent some childhood part of my life in theater. And so, in a way, Bahak is very much kind of involving that aspect of theater and storytelling. But I think for me, that what's interesting about contemporary dance, I think you're absolutely right that, you know, to a certain degree, I wouldn't generalize it, but for sure, a part of the contemporary dance world is very much about the abstraction away from the narrative, abstracting the narrative away from. So it almost becomes abstract work. But
right.
For me, the whole concept of abstracting away from a narrative is a narrative in itself.
Mm.
And I think it's, I would call it one more metaphorical, if you like. Especially in the work that I do, some of it's very kind of narrative in a clear way, and then especially the movement, because the body is an incredible, has this incredible ability to be very truthful, but at the same time ambiguous, somehow so clear and yet so chaotic, because you know each person has their own interpretation of what that movement might be, unless it's very codified. I mean, Kathak is codified, and Indian dance is very codified, and so there is a certain kind of knowledge that one usually needs in order to really appreciate Indian dance. Whereas within contemporary, I think it's kind of broken into several strands, and one of them being about the body as a in a clinical way or a scientific way, and the other one is the body as a in a kind of more narrative way, where the body is telling stories. And so for me, the two are kind of inseparable. It's a bit like, for me, science and spirituality. They're both searching for the truth, but they're just coming in from different roads. Somewhere they meet, I'm interested when it meets in the middle.
Yeah.
And for me, the work that I do is kind of, sometimes it is less narrative, and sometimes it's extremely clear, and I like that play in between the two.
Where do you think this piece falls on that spectrum?
I think it switches from back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
However, it switches back and forth, but the thing is, there is a structure there, there is a narrative there, and you know, if it's theatre, then it's a very clear narrative in a sense that it's words, but words for me, at certain moment, limits the possibilities of allowing the audience to imagine for themselves, because words are so kind of definite, you know.
Yeah.
And whereas the movement of the body kind of, it's somehow kind of not concrete. It's kind of open for interpretation, and so. I think Bauk, you know, there are scenes which are very, where there are words, and there are scenes which are kind of pedestrian, and there are other scenes which are very physical movement, but they're all driven by a narrative. So it's not, for me, that movement is done for the sake of beauty. I'm not really, as an aesthetic, it's definitely not that.
And, when you refer to a narrative, do you see it as sort of a fractured narrative, or do you envision...
I think that's the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
I think that's absolutely the best way to describe it. A fractured sense of narrative. A fractured narrative. I mean, for me, it's a collection of more individual stories of those individuals who are on stage, who are playing those characters. Actually, they're playing them their own experiences to a certain degree. And then I've just kind of diluted it with some kind of fantasy. Rather, I don't like it when it's entirely true, and I don't like it when it's... Not that I don't like it, but I'm more fascinated when it's not entirely true or entirely a lie or imaginary. I like it when there's a cross in between, because my life has so much been about that as well, and my personal life. So I like it when it's that kind of surreal. And it, you know, I was inspired by this kind of... Bauk is... There's a whole scene where it goes from a real situation into a dream situation, and then the dream kind of breaks out into a real situation again, and you just don't know if it happened or didn't really happen. And it's kind of, you know, it came, this thought connects very much with Paris philosophy, that was kind of surrounded by a story which was about a man who always wanted to see the world, but anyway, he fell asleep one day and one moment, and he dreamt at that moment that he turned transformed into a butterfly, and this butterfly rose up into the air and started to fly around the world, and So you get to see the world through a butterfly's body. And then the butterfly returned, and he woke up, and he realized it was only a dream. And then he kind of walked around and did his own, you know, his everyday thing in life. And somewhere in the middle of the day, he kind of stopped and thought, "Hang on, maybe right at this moment, it's the butterfly who's dreaming that the butterfly was a man."
Mm.
And so this kind of you know, which one's real and which one's imaginary. I love this kind of interplay. And so, in a way, I'm kind of a big fan of Kaufman films.
Say that again? I missed the name of the director.
Films of Kaufman?
Kaufman.
Being John Malkovich?
Yeah, yes, yes, okay, yeah.
And I can't really actually pronounce Cinedoce or Cinedoce New York.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right, and... Kaufman. The Orchid Thief, I believe, or Adaptation, excuse me, sorry, yeah.
Adaptation, yeah.
Yeah.
I love this way of thinking. It's kind of Alice in the Wonderland, except for me, you know, this kind of, I'm very fascinated by that. So in a way, the inspiration, not the inspiration, but yeah, in a way, the inspiration of the way of looking at something is, comes a lot from the way, from what I've seen of his work, Kaufman's work, and so
yeah.
In a way, Bauch kind of has elements of that, if you like.
You mentioned that it, the way that this play between fantasy and reality, in the way that you're working with the dancers, or the stories that the dancers are telling, related to your personal life or your personal experience. I was wondering if you could elaborate on that idea a little bit.
Well, it's actually their personal stories, but I think the reason I chose this particular theme or idea of this concept of everybody waiting in a transit lounge was because I spent so much time in transit lounges.
Yeah,
and I kind of look around and I can feel the tension of people really wanting to get back home, wherever home may be. And so I'm kind of, it kind of came out partly, I would say,
yeah.
From kind of hanging out, you know, unwillingly, but patiently in waiting lounges and realizing that everybody is desiring the same thing, which is to get out of the transit lounge and get home.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of questioned what home meant because, you know, after a while, the concept of home starts to blur because you are traveling so much.
Right.
And the more the world becomes global, it has that kind of, for me, a need.
A need to define...
Kind of, I need to explore. I wouldn't say I define it, but it's hard to, research it in with the different dancers who are from different cultures.
It sounds like the process is very collaborative.
I have to say that it's how am I best describe it? It's kind of collaborative. It is a collaborative process up to a point.
Mm.
And I think that point is very important to define for myself.
Uh-huh.
Because I love being inspired by different people's stories, and I'm fascinated, you know, especially during Bauch period, where a creation period where I wanted to really take personal stories from these individual performers who had really amazing stories to tell me, but at the same time, there's a point where I don't quite believe that in every project there should be democracy.
Mm. You're saying you don't quite believe that?
Not in every project, no.
Yeah.
It just depends on what I kind of shift around between democracy and not being democratic.
And what is not a dictatorship, I guess?
Yeah, dictatorship, of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, we come from in contemporary dance, we come from an art of dictatorship, especially in ballet and contemporary dance.
Definitely.
Especially in the history of traditional contemporary dance, you know, before the 80s or 70s maybe, from Martha Graham to Cunningham. I may be wrong, but I don't look at that as a negative thing or a positive thing. It is just a way. And so I'm always kind of shifting. But there is a point where I do kind of, it shifts from democratic to suddenly dictatorship. And that point is very important for me. It's a critical turning point for me, because at that moment I completely take control. And the reason I open it up is because I want to learn from the people I'm working with. I want to exchange. I want the whole script to come from the dialogue, a real dialogue, an organic dialogue between the people that I'm working with. And then once that those raw dialogues are there, I kind of become a dictator in the most, if it can be said, in the most gentle way or a good way, where I start to become a director. I transform from a choreographer to a director and say, okay, you know, I want this, I don't want that, I want this, I want that really means something to me. And suddenly I start becoming like a captain, leading their crew members through a storm. And knowing exactly where they're going, even if they don't. And that for me is kind of the way I work. I start off very collaboratively. Again, it doesn't always happen with every project. Sometimes I'm a complete. I know exactly what I want from the beginning, and so I would choose specific dances for that project, knowing that they're absolutely fine not to follow my vision from the very beginning. And then if I'm looking for something where I need their input and I would like their input, and it's very much a dialogue between myself and the dancers, then I would choose those kind of dances. So it shifts. But I think for me, democracy is a dangerous thing sometimes, especially in work, if it's all the way democratic to the end, because what you start getting is 10 people's vision. And when you get 10 people's vision, sometimes it's a mixed match. And it builds what I call like a biryani, which is an Indian dish where you just put in the rice and the peas and the chicken and cauliflower, and it's just a mixture of different things.
Sounds like a casserole. Sounds like casserole. It's a, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry to interrupt. Continue.
No, the whole, as I said, started very, very collaboratively, and it still remains collaborative. I mean, but I think underneath, they know, and the dancers know, and everybody who works with me knows, hopefully, well, no, they do know, that underneath, that I'm leading it. I like to work in a gentle way where it's not like, it's almost like I guide them to guide them. To get their own decisions, when actually that was my decision. So I kind of guide them to find it, decision that I'm looking for, rather than saying, this is what I want, and that's the way you're going to do it, and I don't really care about your decision. It's not the confronting way. I don't work in a confrontational way all the time.
Why... Why go through the process of having the dancers find it rather than just telling them from the get-go what you want?
Because they have to believe it. If, for example, I want someone to play a character of a very vulnerable woman or man in their 90s, for example.
For example.
Who's close to their death. For me, I would do it in a specific way. I would interpret that in a specific way. And if I ask them to do it in the way that I want to do it in, then it's going to be a bad copy of what I was imagining how I wanted it. And so in a way, I have to kind of guide them to find their interpretation of a 90-year-old person who's extremely vulnerable, close to death.
Mm-hmm.
And when they found it, basically, that's what I was looking for. I was looking for, and so it becomes universal in a way. But I, rather than saying, this is the, I want you to kind of do it in this way or that way, I guide them, or and I'm searching with them, for them, and with them, the creativity of, and the process of trying to find what it means to be in that position of a 90-year-old or whatever, an older gentleman or woman who's very close to death. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. I understand that you made the piece originally with the members of the National Ballet of China, but due to, I think, a national holiday or a big national event, some of them are unable to tour with the work. Is that true?
Yeah, partly. I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, they couldn't tour because they have also their own responsibility to the company, the dancers, you know.
Yeah.
And we were meant to tour for a year, and so in a way, they came under a lot of pressure with their own work, and it became really difficult to keep them with. And such a wonderful relationship with them as well. They're a very special company. But what was interesting was how to find, you know, because it's not easy to replace dancers, especially if it is in a collaborative way and the characters are coming out from those individuals.
Yeah.
So I don't like to put those characters then onto another person when it doesn't belong in the other person, because that person hasn't been through the process of the beginning journey, planting the seed of the idea, which then blooms into something. And so in a way, we have to re-find three new dancers, and they're extraordinary, the three new dancers, and they have their own interpretation, so in a way, you have to allow yourself to let, well, we do, in a way, particularly me and the dancers, have to allow a way to let go of the version that we had of what we remember and felt, and kind of embrace the new new interpretation of the new characters that are on the stage. They're wonderful.
Does that mean that you're recreating those things, going through the process from A to Z with these new performers, or are they just taking on someone else's story?
No, they're not taking on someone else's story, but they would take on, they're kind of, I have to find a new story within them.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes those other stories that the original member did collides with the story that the new person says, and I'm like, okay, you know, this is easier. Why don't you, because you have a similar story, why don't you follow that through, and then I guide it to a little bit in the direction which would kind of suit the structure of the work.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we reshifted some of the kind of structure of the work because some of the characters were suited, particularly in the original cast, with a certain structure, and with the new cast, it needs a little bit of reshuffle of the structure, but the material, the movement material, the group movement material never changed.
Hmm. How do you go about structuring a work? I mean, what guides you in the process of ordering one thing after the next?
Blind panic, I think.
Blind panic?
yeah, panic, really.
What do you mean by that?
It means that I don't like to make choices until very late. I used to love the candy store. You know what I mean? Sweet shop.
Mm-hmm.
We call it corner. In London, England, we call it corner shop.
Mm-hmm.
And I just loved to play. You know, I didn't actually buy anything. I just loved to look at the sweets or pick them up. And you know, I could probably buy one or two when I was a child. But my father's friend owned the sweet shop, so he knew that I would just hang out, and he just let me eat sometimes there. It was just the sense that you could try different sweets with different other sweets. I'm fascinated by the shift in taste rather than the purity of just one. I get bored very quickly with one. I like the idea of creating a bit of chaos, and So in a way, I could be in a studio for a year and not end up with any product, if you like, or even 2 years. So it's really good with my producer where he's like, okay, you know, you've got 14 weeks. You know, when do you think you'll be ready? Okay, 14 weeks, and I have to be ready by the 12th week. So that puts me under pressure.
Yeah.
And so around the 11th week or 10th week, I start to structure stuff and make decisions. And my decisions are, in a way, made, I mean, that's what initiates, sorry, the panic initiates the decisions. But I think that the decisions are made on a very, with a dramaturg, actually. I work closely with a dramaturg, Guy Kools, for the project of Bahok. It's live, and it doesn't have a script like theater where this is how it has to be done. It's devised theater, if you like, but devised dance. So it's organic, so it transforms, and sometimes I'm changing the order depending on what feels right, or what I feel that I want to, the direction I want to take the audience on, particularly. Those decisions are made from an outside point of view where I have to step out and say, you know, okay, what do I want to see? What journey do I want to go on? Why do I want to go in this direction rather than that direction? I ask kind of those questions.
Mm.
And sometimes I don't even ask anything because I just feel like, oh, these two scenes somehow, it's like a jigsaw. It was meant to be connected.
Mm. I wanted to ask you specifically about two things I've noticed in your choreography on video. I unfortunately haven't been able to see your work live, but I notice, especially in some of the bits of Bahok that I've seen, a lot of velocity, high speeds, and also unison dancing. Can you talk to me about how those things are playing out in this piece and perhaps why you choose to use both very fast movement and also unison?
unison, probably because I'm a bad choreographer.
No.
I do unison.
Oh, it's stunning. It's stunning in the work, especially the section where the arms are swinging like windmills. Everyone's moving so fast.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that part, yeah. I mean, I like it when groups can become one, to move as one. I'm fascinated by animals, particularly the national Geographic Channel, or when they show some kind of animal programs where they have herds of, you know, a particular species moving, like particularly birds. It's incredible when you see birds moving as one, like a symphony.
Mm.
I've always been fascinated by that, I think, and because in Indian dance, you're really a soloist.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really have 10 dancers working together. It just doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
You do it maybe because it's a choreography, but we're not trained in that way. And so I've always been fascinated by the opposite. And so, you know, I love also Tricia Brown's work, which is so much about the fragmenting and breaking away from unison.
Yeah.
And kind of the multitude of patterns, but because they're all from different places, the dancers and the performers in Bahok, and they have different cultures and they have different bodies, I was fascinated, I was more intrigued to, and more kind of insistent that we do more unison work.
Mm.
Because it is in unison, but when you get to know the characters, you start to realize how it's kind of connected, they're connected to rhythm and precision, but at the same time, they're so different.
Mm.
And the speed thing is, you know, it kind of comes from my personal experience with Cutback. I think also, I'm fascinated by screens.
Mm-hmm.
So some of my work, very few actually, where I move extremely slowly. I would like to think almost close to Bhutto speed, but that doesn't happen very often because I would fall asleep. But to keep, you know, the other tendency is to go through the other extreme, which is speed.
Yeah.
High velocity, and I kind of move, you know, naturally very fast because I've always been a, I don't know, since childhood I've always run. I'm a 100 meters runner at school.
Really?
And I was quite, I wasn't super fast, but I was fast, and even at rugby I played a little bit at school, and I'm not even the size of what a rugby player should be, but once you give me the ball, I can run for my life, especially in fear. Out of fear and out of running and being bullied, not wanting to get broken arms and broken legs in rugby, which I was forced to do, once they gave me the ball, I ran for my life. I mean, you would run if you had 7 foot, 6 foot guys chasing you.
Yeah.
And they couldn't catch me, and so I realized I had a talent for speed. And I think that's where my it all originated from. So I've always been fascinated by velocity, but it's not really velocity it's not really the high speed that fascinates me. It's the control between fast and slow. The extreme shift between fast and slow that I'm fascinated by, rather than extreme speed, because they move very fast, but then there's this sudden stillness, and it's almost like martial arts. And that's why I admire Bruce Lee so much, and his sense of kind of philosophy or spirituality about energy.
Would you say that performing in a way feels like home to you? Or being on stage feels like a kind of home?
I think that would be a little too poetic for me.
Uh-huh.
It would be a little far away from the truth.
Yeah.
I think being on stage is very sacred for me, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It's a very special moment. It's a very spiritual moment. It's an extremely intense moment. And I feel very alive. But home is not something necessarily where you feel alive. I mean, sometimes I've said the stage is home, but I think the older I get, the more I realize that actually the stage isn't it so intense. For me, home is somewhere where you're completely free, or free to a certain degree. And in the end, you're there to be focused and to perform for an audience. You have expectations. It's not just about you. It's about conveying the message that the director or choreographer wanted to the audience, and for them to experience that message. And so I'm kind of always a little bit in two minds about if the stage is a home for me or not. I'm not sure if it ever was, even if I said it was. But if I did say it was, I think it was more poetic. For my poetic side, if you like.
Uh-huh. Well,
The stage is not just a temple. It's not just a sacred place. It's a battlefield.
Yeah.
It's like, for me, the best way I can describe it is rugby. It's so intense. You have to give everything. And you have to give your body up, to be honest with you. I mean, that's the way I look at when I perform. I can't speak for everyone and how they feel, but for me, it's very much that I have to give my body up. Because it's quite physical kind of work we do to a certain degree. And so in a way, you have to kind of go past that barrier and feel like there is something more important than that. That is the story that you're conveying.
Akram, thank you so much for talking with me today about the Hawk. It's been certainly revealing, and I appreciate your generosity in talking about it. Yes.
And thank you very much.
You're welcome. Yes. Enjoy Dubai.
All right. Take care.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.